Hello, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home, my fire, and my dog. That's pretty much it. My home, my fire, my dog. It's the Fireside Chat. I have this with you every week. It's a chance to have as utterly 100% unscripted. There's no teleprompter. I'm not reading from anything. I am just, as it were, sharing thoughts about life with you. So thanks for watching, and thank you for all the love letters to Otto. There are now people who stop me at the airport and just go say hi to Otto or give Otto a rub. I feel like Otto's companion, or I work for Otto, which is fine with me. That's not an issue. Anyway, the thing that I give some thought to right before I do this each week is, what would I open up with regard to? What will I talk about in the beginning? So some things trigger it. Some things are things I've been thinking about and just want to share with you. But this one is one I just read. 36% of millennials approve of communism. That was the headline on MarketWatch. Some poll was taken. So over a third of millennials, it's something I need to address, because the issue is, that's bad enough, but the issue is larger than that. How is that possible? That's the question to be asked. In light of that, again, I want to always mention related PragerU videos. I did a video titled, Why isn't Communism as Hated as Nazism? It's, of course, they're all 5 minutes, and I strongly recommend that to you. My field of study, I'm not sure I've ever mentioned this, but I might have. My field of study was a fairly rare arena to specialize in. My field was communist affairs. That's what it was called, communist affairs. It was the heyday of the Cold War, and I did that at the School of International Affairs at Columbia University. And I was at what's called the Russian Institute. They had an East Asian Institute, an African Institute, a Middle East Institute, a Russian Institute, probably something else. I was at both the Russian and Middle East Institutes because I did Arabic and Russian. I already had known Hebrew. So I specialized in communist affairs. And I was sure when the Cold War ended that I remember thinking, whoa, am I lucky I didn't go into that field? That won't be relevant anymore. I couldn't even get a job. But it turns out to have been the most important thing I could have studied, in fact, outside of religion, which I've been studying my whole life. Because to understand the left and to understand communism is to understand the modern world. It is beyond belief that 36% of millennials approve of communism. It shows you how bad our education system is from elementary school on. To graduate a college or to graduate high school and not know how evil communism has been is as if, well, maybe they don't even know. It's like not knowing how evil Nazism has been. I mean, can you imagine if there were a poll, 36% of millennials have a favorable view of Nazism? You would either assume one of two things, right? You would either assume that a third of millennials are evil, or a third of millennials are utterly ignorant, right? Is there any other possibility if a third of millennials or a third of any group thought favorably of Nazism? You know, I wonder, which I often wonder, what do you learn in high school and college? And I guess the answer is leftism. How bad America is, how racist America is, and all the related things. You learn a tremendous amount about climate change, I'm sure. But the really important stuff, the good and evil stuff, which that's to me, that and history are the most important things you could ever study. what has happened and what is good and what is bad. There's nothing more important. I've always been preoccupied with good and evil. That's why I did communist affairs. That's why that was my field of study, because it was so obvious to me that anything that deprives billions of people of the elementary right to speech, to expression, to religion, which engaged in the greatest genocides in human history, it's pretty important to learn about that. I mean, I'm looking at you, and I'm asking you, at any age, whether you're a millennial or not, do you have any idea how many people Mao killed in China? How many people Stalin killed in the Soviet Union, which was Russia, and the republics it owned? How many people Pol Pot, Khmer Rouge, Red Cambodians killed? You know, almost a third of Cambodians were massacred by the communist regime there. Every communist regime massacres and deprives people of any dignity. There's no dignity when you can't speak freely. That's when you are rendered that is worse. I do believe that is worse than physical bondage. If you said to me, I could live free, I could live in my home and have my meals and so on, but I could not say whatever was on my mind, or I could say what is on my mind, but I would be in bondage to some master, I would take the latter. That, by the way, is the famous American phrase. I think it's on one of the license plates in some American state. Give me liberty or give me death. Actually, that's Patrick Henry. It's live free or die. That's on one of the license plates. I don't remember which state. I think Vermont or New Hampshire. Which is somewhat ironic. Isn't Bernie Sanders from Vermont? guy who honeymooned in the Soviet Union. It's hard to believe he has a license plate on his car, live free or die. It's one of life's ironies, if that's the case. If I'm right about the license plate. You know how many people we're talking about? You know, I mean, you know, you have a moral obligation. I believe we owe those who were massacred one thing. We can't undo their suffering, but we can at least give them the dignity of knowing what they went through. I believe everybody needs to read about the Holocaust. I think what the Nazis did. I think everybody needs to read about what Stalin did. Just one book. What Mao did, what Pol Pot did. I went to Cambodia a few years ago, and I made it my business to visit what's called the killing fields, where the communists of Cambodia massacred their own citizens. These are auto-genocides, by the way. This is the interesting thing. These are genocides against your own people. Mao did it against Chinese. It's between 60 and 80 million people. Now, remember, you have to realize something about the suffering. Let's take the lower number, 60 million. So for every one of those, think of think of the ripple effect. The number of people who have suffered because that person died. It's an astonishing number the amount of suffering induced for no good reason. Do you know why Mao starved 60 million people to death? So that he could send all of the food to the Soviet Union in return for weapons, so that he could make China into a military power. The death of all those people was completely irrelevant. And the suffering, and then the Cultural Revolution, and then what Stalin did to between 20 and 40 million people, that's just the ones killed, not the ones. We're not talking about the people incarcerated. I mean, how many young people ever heard of the Gulag Archipelago? How could you graduate high school, let alone college, and not know the Gulag or Auschwitz? That's obviously Nazi, but I mean, there are certain terms. I mean, to think that everyone at college knows what preferred pronoun means, but doesn't know what Auschwitz or Gulag is? This is sick, folks. This is sick. This is morally and intellectually sick. Most colleges are worthless. I wish they were worthless. They're worse than worthless. When you know such nonsense, what is your preferred pronoun? I should do a talk on preferred pronouns. The preferred pronoun issue should not be an issue. I conduct orchestras periodically. I conducted an orchestra. Just allow me this tangent for a moment. I conducted this orchestra many years ago, and the timpanist, that's the person who plays the drums in an orchestra, was a woman. And I said to the conductor after the rehearsal, their regular conductor, I said, you know, it's pretty rare to see a female timpanist. And he said, yes, but as it happens, this person's a transsexual. That's the way it was known and should be known. And I thought, big deal. And it meant nothing. And this is way, way before anything that we talk about trans today. Because for all intents and purposes, as far as I was concerned, this was a female. She looked like a female, talked like a female, had a female name, dressed like a female. Nobody cares. If she were in a class in college, she wouldn't have to announce my preferred pronoun is she. Everybody would have said she. This is not an issue. It's the people who want to destroy male-female distinction that have come up with the preferred pronoun thing. If you look like a woman, then you're a she. Okay. That's important. That's really important. How could you not know this pure evil known as communism? Well, it's been an enforced ignorance. That's what it's been. You have a moral obligation to know the suffering of those in the past, especially on such large scale. So that's a very, it's a depressing statistic. Okay, let's see now. Let's begin with our video question. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. All right, I press the magic button. And nothing happens because I didn't press it well enough. Now I did. Okay, hi.
Hey Dennis, I'm Vince Thal. I'm a 16-year-old high school student in Los Angeles, and I'm a member of PragerFORCE. My question for you is, what would you say to conservatives who morally support Israel, but have problems with the amount of money that America gives to them, based simply off of the principles of fiscal conservatism and limiting government spending?
Okay, good question. In case you didn't catch it, folks, and thank you, Vince. Vince does not strike me as an introvert, as a shy guy. I have a sense that he feels confident in expressing himself, which is great. Thanks for being on PragerFORCE. So, let's see. I know it's transcribed. What would you say to conservatives who morally support Israel but have problems with the amount of money America gives to Israel because these conservatives offer the principles of fiscal conservatism, fiscal being monetary conservatism, and limiting government spending? Well, there are a number of answers. Number one, not necessarily in order of importance, the vast majority of financial aid we give to Israel then spends on American military hardware. In effect, it comes back to the United States. And that is not true for all of the countries that we give money to. Number two, if people isolate Israel, there's obviously a hatred of Israel involved. If they say we shouldn't be giving money to anybody, then fine. But if they say we shouldn't be giving money to Israel, you have a very simple question. Why do you isolate Israel? I mean, we give plenty to Egypt and we give plenty to other places. And to a very large extent, it is very good for the United States. We want to help countries that are allied with us. Why would we not want to do that? And third, this notion, well, morally, but not fiscally, I don't understand the distinction. Moral is more important to me than anything. That's why I'm not a libertarian. I think morally. I don't only think fiscally. So people have to decide what is the appropriate thing. The day that the Muslim countries around Israel say, you know what, folks, Israel's the size of New Jersey or El Salvador. Let's just leave it alone. You know what? Let them live in peace. Let's have a big sort of Middle East common market or Middle East union and benefit each other. Then we won't have to give aid to Israel. Israel's the most embattled country, the only embattled country for its existence on the face of the earth. I think that's a good enough reason to give, but please know that they spend their money on our stuff, and we get a massive amount from Israel. I mean, just think of the Iron Dome, the anti-missile defense system that Israel has perfected, along with the United States. We get our money's worth many times over in supporting Israel. Okay, Mike, 70. That's a jump. Okay, 1 minute. How do I get rid of the... There we go. Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi. Salutations to Dennis and Otto. He was not moved, Mike. Here's a question from an old curmudgeon. Let me start by saying I hold no malice in my heart for LGBT people, but I really resent the current campaign bent on normalizing and even romanticizing the LGBT way of life. The leftist entertainment industry owns a bully pulpit of influence and is taking full advantage. Why do leftists feel the need to push this on us? There is a reason. Because, and that is the reason for the hatred of Chick-fil-A originally, until they bent and stopped giving money to the hatred for the Salvation Army, and Chick-fil-A no longer gives money to the Salvation Army. Salvation Army treats everyone equally. If you come for help to the Salvation Army, they don't care if you're trans, if you're gay, if you're bi, if you're indeterminate. They just help human beings. But being religious Christians, which is why they're so charitable to a large extent, there's no secular Salvation Army, right? Think about it. Doing the work that they're doing for such little money, they get paid almost nothing. It's unbelievable, the salaries of people in the Salvation Army. But one of their beliefs, aside from loving their fellow human being, is that God believes that it is God's will that men and women marry. I believe that, and it's, why does that make you a hater? I don't even understand that. Certainly the gay couple whose kids my wife and I are godparents to know my belief. They respect me for the belief, in fact, but they're healthy. They don't believe that everybody has to believe as they. It's so funny how people on the left always... Christians think everybody has to believe in Christ. Yeah, but you believe everybody has to believe in same-sex marriage. and you force a lot more people to do that than Christians force people to believe in Christ. And I'm a Jew saying this. The reason for the anger is, it's not anger at not treating gays properly, which I would be angry at if a person didn't treat a gay properly. It's they angry that they still maintain that marriage should be between a man and a woman. And in my heart, I'm not certain, so I say in my heart, I suspect that they suspect there may be some validity to it. If they were secure in the notion that their line, gender doesn't matter, which I think is not true, gender is extremely significant, then what would they care what people think? Why would the LGBTQ groups care what the Salvation Army or Chick-fil-A thinks? Right? Thinks. If they don't act on it, what do I care? If you think that I am wrong in my religion, let's say, just totally wrong, but you treat me respectfully, what do I care? You can think I'm wrong, but every leftist movement is totalitarian, meaning they want to control how you think and certainly speak. That's why the left is so dangerous. It is not enough that you treat gays properly, and which everyone should. You must think like the LGBTQ community, or they will ruin your life. That's the difference. They don't want us to think a different thought. That's why the left is so scary. It wants to control how you think and how you speak. There is no exception to that in the entire world of the left. Liberals don't think that way. Conservatives don't think that way. But the left does. Always did. Always will. It's a distinguishing feature of leftism. Controlling how people think. Andrew, 18, Los Angeles. What are some key values or attributes that helped you become successful? P.S. Give Otto some more belly rubs for me. Should I? You're the man. You are the man. That was from Andrew, 18, Otto. What are some key values or attributes that helped you become successful? Well, believe it or not, that I aimed, this is going to sound corny, but I'm going to tell you my answer. I didn't aim for success. I aimed to do what was right. That was it. That is one of the single biggest reasons that look, hard work. I've worked very hard. I have maximized my gifts. Everyone has gifts. It's a big thing to know what you give. There is no human being I've ever met who doesn't have a gift. It may take a while for you to realize what it is, but that's a factor. But the biggest for me was that and all those who know me for many years, and there are many people who do, they all always marveled. I wasn't, believe it or not, I wasn't particularly ambitious. I mean, I hoped I would succeed for the sake of the values I have. But I didn't live for success. I wanted to have wonderful friends. I wanted to have a wonderful family life. I wanted a whole host of things, but I was never success-driven. And the people who are success-driven become successful sometimes, but not for long. It's very few people who for whom it's enduring. And then they hit a point in life and they go, that's it? I got the success, and now what? So, and by the way, if you aim for success, you'll never be happy because there's always more success to have, right? You become a CEO of a company, but there's a bigger company you could be a CEO of. That's why I'm convinced, that's why billionaires go for $2 billion. They're just not satisfied with $1 billion. I always wonder, why are you still pushing? I never quite figured it out. I always think when the Forbes, what is the Forbes 400, the 400 richest people come, Forbes magazine publishes each year. And I always think people like us think, wow, boy, you're on that list. You are really rich, which is true. But you know what? Number 17 is not happy. You don't get on that list unless you really want to be rich. Just the way it is. I'm not even saying they're wrong. If they don't hurt anybody, that's fine with me. But I never wanted to be rich. I never wanted to be poor either. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe in poverty. It's not an ideal in my religious conviction. But I never sought to be rich. I never. Success to me was leading a good life, and having good friends, and as I said, and my religion, and having a family. That's success. We have defined success in a bad way. That's worthy of a its own open commentary as well. So be noble. Pursue virtue, and that's that. And all these other things in life, like friends and family and religion and hobbies. I mean, there's so much to give you joy. There's success doesn't give people as much joy as as people think. That's the problem. That's why parents tell you got to get into a good college. So what? So if you don't get into a quote unquote good college, what the hell's the difference? You know, it's amazing. I've on occasion mentioned this. What's our time factor here?
25.
I've on occasion mentioned this. I've been on radio 37 years. You should try to hear my radio show. It's 3 hours every day, every weekday. It's easily found on the internet, either on a celestial or on terrestrial radio or through the internet. So I've often mentioned this. I have been asked almost everything. I've been asked about my life, my personal life, my family, my childhood. Do you know what? There is only one question I have never been asked, ever. What college did you go to? Nobody cares. The thing that we raise kids to think is the most important thing in their life, and that's what they do think. It's what most parents teach their kids. Got to get into a good college. We're gonna get you to have special, courses so you get better SAT scores, and you're going to join 17 extracurricular groups so it's a better application to some prestigious college. But later, no one cares. Let me tell you, if you're young right now, nobody's going to give a hoot what college you went to. You will either impress people as mature, knowledgeable, reliable, hardworking, all these wonderful traits, or not. But it doesn't even occur. I'll bet it never occurred to any of you watching me each week. Gee, I don't know if I'm going to watch him next week. I don't know what college he went to. You don't even know if I went to college. And it doesn't matter. That's the point. You earn your bona fides, in other words, you get legitimacy in life by how you act, talk, think, etc., how you behave, not where you went to college. So it's all part of the success issue. So by knowing all of that, I have more success today than ever before in my life, but it's I was happy before. I just was. I was trying to do what I could do. And I always said and the rest is in God's hands, right? I will try to do, I really do believe I want to do what God wants me to do, which is to, in religious terms, bring the world to the Ten Commandments. That's what I believe. Because if everybody observed the Ten Commandments, we wouldn't need police, we wouldn't need locks on our doors, and nobody would be hurt. Be a really nice world. Would be perfect, but it would be terrific. That's it. And by the way, I'm successful. Okay, so I am successful, but it's all relative, right? I mean, so I always think about this. So let's see. Take my radio career. So I've had a couple of million listeners. I think I have more. I may have more, may have less, but this is averaged, I think, about a couple of million listeners a week. Different listeners, so it's a lot of people. But is it a lot of people? The guy who broadcasts in America at the same time I do for much of my career, Rush Limbaugh, has 4 times more listeners than I do. It never bothered me for a day. Was I a success? Yeah, compared to people who have 2 listeners, I was a rousing success. Compared to him, I wasn't a success. So what does success mean? So now there's a billion views on Prager University. That's even more than Rush Limbaugh gets, I acknowledge. So now am I more successful than him? I mean, this is not how I think. It's a very important thing to understand that. It's why I've spent so much time on this question. Because you're misled to think that's the be-all and end-all of life. You have to even define, you should write down, what does success mean? In my opinion, a big part of success is getting married and making a family. Not everybody can do it. I acknowledge that. Not everybody could be a CEO. I acknowledge that, too. Having friends who love you, that's a big success. That's a huge success. You know how many lonely people there are? Would you rather have two people, three, four wonderful friends in your life and make $150,000 or make $250,000 and have no friends? Every one of you will say you'd rather have the friends in $50,000. So what's success mean? Having friends is successful. It's really important stuff. Maybe it's a good one to end on. I have other good questions here, including Eric in Budapest. Coming to Budapest to speak, by the way, Eric. I don't announce my speech in Hungary. I got two invitations to Hungary. So I'll let you know. All right. That was a passion-filled session. It was an important stuff. By the way, that reminds me to remind you of the following. First, these fireside chats are really not dated. So if you go back, 40 fireside chats ago, I hope you'll still find it extremely valuable. And show it to friends. These are important things I talk about. And they're not talked about much. Certainly not enough. And if you want to know, since I mentioned my belief in God and so on, I think you'll find my two books. I'm going to have five eventually on the first five books of the Bible. My commentary, it's meant to be life-changing. It's called The Rational Bible. Give it a try. I only use reason to make my case. God is a big deal. I want to talk about that once. Why is God a big deal? Be that as it may, I'll see you next week. On behalf of Otto, thanks for watching. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.